All right, let's jump into another deep dive. Today, we're going deep into some excerpts from a lecture by Dr. John Oswalt, and it's all about the Book of Kings.
Oh, cool.
We're going to tackle a question that might surprise you.
Yeah.
Why was idolatry, like SCH, a big deal in the Old Testament? And what does any of it even have to do with us, like today?
Well, it's really fascinating. You know, this whole period in Kings, it's wrestling with this, like, spiritual crisis and renewal, right? The people of Judah are facing some pretty serious consequences.
Oh, yeah.
For straying from that covenant with God and the story of King Josiah trying to fix things. It really highlights these struggles.
Totally. We're just dropped right into this scene where Josiah finds this, like, lost book of the law, and he's completely shaken up by what he reads.
Yeah.
His response is to send people to consult the prophetess Huldah.
Right.
Now, I'm curious, why Huldah? Why not just use the Urim and Thummim, you know, those sacred lots, to get a straightforward yes or no from God?
I think Josiah wasn't really looking for a simple answer. Imagine, like, finding this document that basically outlines the fate of your whole nation.
Oh, wow.
You wouldn't just want confirmation, right? You'd want understanding.
Oh, for sure.
Josiah needed hope.
Yeah.
And a way forward in the face of this, like, looming doom.
Yeah.
Huldah offered more than just a yes or no. She provided context and interpretation.
So rather than a divine magic eight ball, he needed someone to really help him unpack the gravity of this whole situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
And what's so interesting is when Huldah confirms this prophecy of doom, Josiah doesn't weep for himself.
Huh.
He weeps for the sins of the entire nation.
Wow.
Oswalt really emphasizes how remarkable this is.
It definitely makes you think about our world today, you know, how much we emphasize, like, individual responsibility.
Yeah.
What does it mean to share the burden of our nation's actions? You know, it's rare to see that level of, like, collective accountability these days.
It really highlights the contrast
between
the ancient Israelite worldview and our modern perspective. Josiah saw himself as intrinsically linked to the fate of his people.
And, you know, trying to fix things, Josiah makes this really traumatic covenant with God, literally cutting an animal in two.
Wow.
As the symbol of his commitment.
Wow.
But there's a detail Oswalt points out that I had never really noticed before. The text says that the people simply stood by the covenant.
Oh, interesting.
They didn't actively participate.
That's crucial.
Yeah.
It suggests that Josiah's reforms were largely a top-down initiative.
Mm.
His intentions were good, but they didn't seem to, like, truly penetrate the hearts of the people.
Right.
It makes me think about the nature of change itself.
Yeah.
What does it take for a change to be truly lasting and not just a temporary fix?
Right. Think about, like, movements you've seen rise and fall.
Mm-hmm.
With it, the charisma of the leader, a shared sense of urgency, or something else entirely that made the difference?
It's a complex question.
Yeah.
No easy answers.
For sure.
But this story of Josiah.
Yeah.
Really highlights how tricky it can be to enact, like, meaningful, lasting change, even with a leader who is, like, deeply committed to the cause.
And that leads us to Oswalt's take on idolatry.
Okay.
Which he argues goes way beyond just, like, worshiping statues.
Right.
He describes it as a worldview, a way of thinking that says we can manipulate the world to get what we want.
It's about control.
Yeah.
The desire to bend the world to our will.
Yeah.
Even if it means violating those boundaries between humanity, nature, and the divine.
Wow.
Oswalt even uses some pretty controversial examples to illustrate this point.
Oh, like what?
Like bestiality, incest, and homosexual behavior.
That's a bold statement. I mean, those are very loaded topics. What's he getting at with those examples?
Well, he's not condoning those actions at all.
Okay.
What he's arguing is that they represent a breakdown of that order that God established. It's about blurring the lines between what is sacred and what is not.
So it's not just about the specific act itself, but what that act represents, a rejection of these divinely ordained boundaries.
Exactly. And that's where idolatry comes in.
Right.
Oswalt argues that when we try to manipulate the world for our own desires, we're essentially engaging in a form of idolatry. Mm-hmm. It's about putting ourselves in the place of God, trying to control things that are ultimately beyond our grasp.
So even though we're not bowing down to golden calves anymore, that same impulse, that desire to manipulate and control, is still very much a part of the human experience.
Absolutely. And it manifests in so many ways, sometimes subtly, sometimes overtly.
So what does that look like in a modern context? Are we talking about, like, the desire for status idols or the relentless pursuit of material possessions.
Those are definitely some potential examples. Yep. So let's dive deeper into those ideas after a quick break. Oswant makes this like provocative connection between ancient idolatry and our modern world.
Yeah.
He's arguing that when we prioritize, you know, like material possessions, status symbols,
mm-hmm.
we're essentially engaging in like a subtle form of idolatry.
It's interesting. It's like we're trying to create our own little kingdoms
mm-hmm.
built on external validation
mm-hmm.
and fleeting pleasures.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just stuff. You know, it's about what we ultimately place our trust in.
Right.
Are we looking to material things to give us meaning and purpose?
Mm.
Are we seeking fulfillment through external validation?
Right.
Rather than through like a deeper connection with something greater than ourselves.
It's easy to get caught up in that pursuit of more, more, more.
Oh, yeah.
But what's fascinating is how Oswald ties this back to the concept of boundaries.
Right.
He suggests that idolatry is ultimately about blurring the lines between the creator and the created.
He uses this imagery of a tapestry.
Oh, wow.
With each thread representing like a distinct aspect of creation.
Yeah.
When we engage in idolatry, it's like we're pulling at those threads.
Oh, I see.
Trying to unravel the tapestry and reshape it according to our own desires.
So it's not just about wanting a bigger house or a fancier car. It's about like a deeper desire
mm-hmm.
to control and manipulate our reality.
It's about putting ourselves in the center of the universe rather than acknowledging, you know, a power greater than ourselves. And this desire for control can manifest in so many ways.
Oh, yeah.
From our obsession with technology mm-hmm. to our attempts to manipulate relationships.
Right.
For our own benefit.
You know, thinking back to Josiah, it's almost like he was trying to reweave that tapestry
mm-hmm.
to restore the proper order through his reforms.
Right.
But as we discussed, even with his best efforts, the people didn't fully embrace the change.
Yeah.
It was more about compliance than true transformation.
That's the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do we move beyond superficial change and create a society
right.
where people are genuinely invested in living differently?
Yeah. If top-down approaches like Josiah's reforms often fail to create lasting change, what does work?
That's a huge question.
Yeah.
But I think the key takeaway here is that real change requires a shift in our worldview, a recognition that we're not the masters of the universe.
It's about recognizing the inherent dignity and worth of all beings.
Yes.
And embracing a way of life that's grounded in something more than just our own selfish desires.
Oswald suggests that this shift requires humility.
Dope.
A willingness to let go of our need for control and to submit to a higher authority.
Which is, like, ironically, the opposite of what idolatry is all about.
Right.
It's fascinating how this ancient concept still has so much to teach us about the human condition.
Absolutely. And it's something we need to be constantly mindful of, especially in a world that, like, constantly bombards us with messages that encourage, you know, self-gratification,
right.
instant gratification.
Yeah.
Oswald goes on to say that every single action taken during Josiah's reforms was performed by the king himself.
Oh, wow.
There's no mention of the people actively participating.
Really?
What are your thoughts on that?
That's a fascinating detail.
Yeah.
It really emphasizes the limitations of, like, top-down change.
Right.
Even with the best intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Lasting change can't be forced.
Yeah.
It has to come from within.
It's like trying to force a plant to grow.
Oh, yeah.
By pulling on its stem.
Right.
You might see some temporary results, but ultimately you're just going to damage the plant.
Right.
Real growth requires nourishment, the right conditions, and time.
Yeah.
And I think the same is true for societal change.
So if we can't rely on top-down approaches to fix things,
mm-hmm.
what does it take to create lasting change?
Well, if we consider the, like, limitations of Josiah's reforms,
yeah.
perhaps what's missing is a sense of shared purpose.
Okay.
People need to feel like they are a part of something larger than themselves,
mm-hmm.
that their individual choices and actions have meaning and impact.
So it's not just about telling people what to do, but about inspiring them to embrace a new way of being.
That's what's so powerful about the concept of covenant in the Old Testament. It's not just a set of rules. It's a relationship.
Yeah.
Based on mutual responsibility and shared commitment.
That sense of shared commitment seems to be what's lacking in the story of Josiah's reforms.
Totally.
The people were present, but they weren't truly engaged.
Right.
They hadn't internalized the covenant in the same way that Josiah had.
And that brings us back to our original question about what makes change truly lasting.
Right.
I think it starts with cultivating a sense of belonging, of interconnectedness. When people feel like they are part of something bigger than themselves, they are more likely to embrace change and make it their own.
So instead of imposing change from the top down, we need to create the conditions where change can organically emerge from the ground up.
Exactly. And that requires a shift in our focus.
So how do we cultivate this sense of interconnectedness, of shared purpose? How do we inspire people to not just comply, but to truly embrace a new way of being?
That's a complex question. And to be honest, there is no like easy answer.
Right.
But I think one important step is to like recognize and celebrate the diversity of our human experience. Instead of trying to fit everyone into a single mold, we need to create space for people to express their unique gifts and talents.
That makes sense. If people feel valued and respected for who they are, they're more likely to feel invested in the well-being of the community as a whole.
Right. And it's about recognizing that we all have something to contribute.
That's like a tapestry where each thread, no matter how small or seemingly insignificant, plays a role in the overall beauty and strength of the fabric.
Exactly. We need to move away from this like individualistic mindset and embrace a more holistic understanding of what it means to be human.
Right.
We're all interconnected.
Yeah.
And our well-being is bound up with the well-being of others.
So this idea of moving beyond idolatry, both in its ancient and modern forms, requires a shift in our worldview.
Yeah.
A recognition that we're not the masters of the universe.
It's about embracing humility, interconnectedness, and a commitment to something greater than ourselves.
And maybe, just maybe, that's where we'll find the key to creating a world where real, lasting change is possible.
It's a journey worth taking.
Yeah.
And one that requires constant reflection and reevaluation.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into the world of ancient idolatry.
Yeah.
And it's surprisingly relevant implications for our modern lives.
It's amazing how these ancient texts can still speak to us across the centuries, challenging our assumptions and inviting us to consider new ways of being in the world.
And for our listeners out there, I think the challenge is to examine our own lives and see where those subtle forms of idolatry might be creeping in. What are we placing our trust in?
Yeah.
What are we trying to control? And how can we shift our focus to something more meaningful and lasting?
It's a question worth pondering.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep. So we've been talking about how real change, it needs more than just outward compliance, right? It needs like a genuine shift in hearts and minds.
And that's where this idea of shared purpose comes in.
Yeah.
It's not enough to tell people what to do.
Right.
They need to feel invested in the change to see how it connects to something bigger than themselves.
You know, thinking about Josiah's reforms, it seems like that's the element that was missing.
Right.
They were there, but they weren't really engaged in the process.
Josiah's reforms, they ultimately didn't stick. Right. Real change, you can't impose it from the top down. It has to well up from within.
So how do we cultivate that kind of deep, lasting change? What inspires people to not just go along with something, but to actually embrace a new way of being?
It's a complex question.
Yeah.
As we've been discussing, there's no easy answer. But I think part of it involves recognizing and valuing the diversity of human experience. Instead of trying to force everyone into a single mold, we need to create space for people to express their unique gifts and talents.
That makes sense. If people feel seen and respected for who they are, they're more likely to feel invested in the well-being of the community as a whole.
Exactly. And it's about understanding that we all have something to contribute.
Like that tapestry analogy again.
Yeah.
Each thread, no matter how small or insignificant, plays a role in the overall beauty and strength of the fabric.
We need to move away from this individualistic mindset. You know, it's so prevalent in our culture.
Yeah.
Embrace a more holistic understanding of what it means to be human.
Yeah.
We're all interconnected and our well-being is bound up with the well-being of others.
So this idea of moving beyond idolatry, both in its ancient forms and its modern expressions, it really boils down to a shift in perspective.
Totally.
Recognizing that we are not the center of the universe, that there's a power greater than ourselves at work.
Embracing humility, interconnectedness, and a commitment to something greater than our own selfish desires.
And maybe, just maybe, That's how we find the key to creating a world where real lasting change is possible.
It's a journey worth taking.
Yeah.
One that requires constant reflection and reevaluation.
Well, this has been such a fascinating deep dive into the world of ancient idolatry and its surprisingly relevant implications for our modern lives.
Yeah, it's amazing how these ancient texts can still speak to us across the centuries, challenging our assumptions and inviting us to consider new ways of being in the world.
It's been great having you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this.
And for our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on another deep dive. We'll see you next time.